Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of the VCpreneur podcast, a podcast that provides a unique perspective of the startup world through the lens of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. I'm your host Digjay, and today I have with me Vindhya, who's a part of the product team at Canva's Pixels, one of the major free stock photo and video platforms. She's also the founder of On That Job, a cohort-based learning program that helps people understand the scope of a particular job, especially in the early stages of a startup. Vindhya is popular on product Twitter and known for her blogs on all things product management. This is a special episode where we'll try to unpack the black box of product management and provide a perspective on the role of a product manager, which is the role that every founder takes up when starting a company. In this episode, Vindhya talks about her experience as a product consultant with early stage startups, the typical life cycle of a product, and how modern no-code creator tools are inverting that, building customer-centric products, common missteps by founders at the MVP and product market fit stages of a startup, identifying and hiring good product managers, and transition of responsibilities from the founder to product manager. This was a very insightful discussion on all things product and startups. I learned a lot from my chat with Vindhya, and I hope you enjoy this discussion too. So without much ado, let's dive in and find out what Vindhya has to share. Hi Vindhya, welcome to the VCpreneur podcast. Very excited to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm really looking forward to the things we are going to discuss here and learn more from you about how founders and VCs operate within this ecosystem. So very excited.
Yeah, sure. And you know, for those who don't know you, maybe we can start with a brief background about yourself before we unpack everything related to product management.
For sure. My name is Vindhya. I have been doing product consulting for a while now. Before this, I used to be a chief of staff at this company called Clarisites, which is in marketing analytics, and they're doing really well now. But I used to handle product and growth for them. Before that, I was at Loco, which is part of Pocket Aces. For folks that haven't heard of Pocket Aces, it has some brands like Filter Copy that does YouTube videos or has produce shows like Little Things on Netflix, etc. So they also had a tech product wing out of Bangalore. So led their live platform and it was called Loco. So had a lot of fun doing that. Before that, I was at DirectAI building Flock product, which is a Slack equivalent built out of India and focused in the Indian market. And before that, I was at ITC because like most product managers, I started out being an engineer and did that for a while. And then I decided I don't think I'll be the best engineer out there. So I had to go and try different things. And yeah, that is how I ended up in product management. And it's been that for me for a while now.
Very interesting. It's a really interesting background. And clearly your curiosity, you know, led you to figure out your own path to product management.
Yeah.
And importantly, you know, figure out the black box that a lot of people refer to when they think about product management. And that's exactly what we want to, you know, unpack from our conversation today. So, you know, let's start with the basics first. And my first question will be, what is a typical life cycle of a product? When a founder thinks about product as a startup, thinking about the idea to the final version, which is ready to ship out.
I think, in typical world, life cycle would probably be that you think of an idea, you go validate that idea, you come up with things you can build, and then you launch. But I don't think it's necessarily like that, especially for people that are just starting out, because you're not ideally just thinking about random problems. You have a particular theme that you're really interested in, and then you're already drilling down on what the pain points are in that particular domain for you or for people around you. And then you're building or you're either talking to people in that sector, understanding that more. But now more and more, I'm seeing a trend where most founders are going and building their own prototypes on like Figma or one of those other tools, and then going and showing the users probably what the end product looks like before they start building. And I think that is very wise because building is a lot of effort, not just from the financial standpoint of view, but the amount of people you have to manage and what kind of build value the end product will have. So that is very interesting. And also, obviously, like the first time you launch, you're not going to be happy with it. So you're going to come back and rethink your strategy. So I think it's great to build as less as possible, use no code tools, use Figma to all its capabilities, and then figure out where you want to go. So in short, I think the life cycle is very different in terms of where you are as a founder or where you are as a product manager. But the whole idea is don't build before you know this is a problem you want to solve.
Right. And just for the benefit of our listeners, you know, could you just briefly tell us what exactly Figma is and how is it, you know, helping founders envisage the idea before, you know, actually building and working on it?
So Figma is a design tool, which is very easy to build. Most components, like say, if you wanted a button or a mobile layout, most of it is already built and it's very drag and drop. Of course, there are more things that you can do with it. You can go and build your own buttons and your own layout from scratch. But ideally, the Figma community, which is where you'd find all the templatized versions, you can find some variation of what you want to build and then build on top of it. So I think that's very, very helpful because then you don't have to also learn design and understand design theory and all of this. You can just look at what somebody else has done and then build your version on top of it, and even then go and validate your ideas. As a founder, you don't want to deal with so many things, right? Like you have to understand design and product and the market you're in and find the people that will either buy your product or will engage with your product. So I think you should try to minimize some things that have an easy way out. I think design is very, very difficult to get right. And if you already have a boilerplate of things that you can just play around and say, you know, this is how the user experience should look, but hey, this is what I want to build on top of it, then you don't have to spend too much time on that, at least in the very beginning, right? And so you can probably test out ideas in, say, a week or so. And that's the learning curve on products like these as well. And even no code apps, right? You could go on various platforms and you can just drag and drop and you will build something meaningful. So I think that trend is really coming up. And that is great for founders at any stage to just, even if you have built a product and you want to build a new product, this is a great way to think about things.
So, you know, a lot of times when you think about product, we also think about the customer and we want to keep the customer at the center of the product and, you know, build keeping him or her in mind. So could you share a couple of case studies or interesting, unique ways that companies are adopting today to do that effectively? I mean, for example, you know, Amazon starts with a press release of their own. They kind of think of the end product first and kind of re-engineer their way back to build the actual product. So what are some interesting, unique ways that, you know, you've seen companies do it very effectively?
Yeah, I think a lot of companies modeled on top of what Amazon does. But now that they're becoming more like product focused and thinking from more the mindset of customers exactly, I think a lot of people are also doing like just hacky ways of building it together, right? I have heard where people just take customer inputs and then create, hey, I will come back and build this particular thing for you, and take that approach where they are writing more personas of the user, which is you go and say, hey, this user has this problem and I'm going to solve for this. That is a model that's really picking up and really working. I think on B2B and a lot more focus on customer success is coming up, which is great because till now, mostly the product managers were doing customer success or the founder would go and talk to the customers and figure out. But now that role is really emerging well and it's becoming a bridge and the actual voice of users, right? Versus everybody saying, oh, we know what the users are doing, etc. I think a lot of companies are coming in and forming smaller teams to do smaller tasks versus trying to achieve everything in like one quarter or how it used to work before. So that is an emerging trend. I wouldn't say that a particular company is doing this and most companies are modeled out of all the companies I've heard. I think most people just go back to Amazon, but more and more nuances are coming up in the product teams and with the founders as well.
Right. Very interesting. So you've been consulting startups for a while now, and you've worked with founders and early stage startups like Loco that you mentioned. What are some mistakes that you see, you know, early stage founders make, especially when they're building their MVP or the first version of their product?
I wouldn't say they're essentially mistakes, but I think when anybody's trying to build something, you come up with your own set of solutions to this product, and sometimes you're too married to it, right? It is like if you're so passionate about, say, you're solving fintech and you're like, hey, neobanking is the next thing, but you forget to see what else it could probably be, or how to perhaps differentiate yourself from various other neobanks that are out there, because you're so focused that everybody needs a new bank and that is the only problem you'll solve. But perhaps maybe there is a set of people who don't need a newer bank, and the idea that you are trying to probably solve is their credit score, right? So there are various themes within, like, say, fintech or something that you could pick and solve, but you're too married to the idea that this is exactly what needs to be done, and you go about thinking in like one direction. I think the second and the most harming thing that you can do is most founders take up too much on themselves. They're like, hey, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this. And they're not able to give up that aspect to other teams or other people that focus dedicatedly on these areas. So there is a lot of communication that goes back and forth because they think I understand the problem the best, so I know how to solve it, and this person does not. So sometimes you're giving context, but sometimes you're also overstepping your line and trying to just go in this direction that you believe in.
Right. And what are some effective ways that you've seen, you know, founders manage that, you know, especially when they get closer to MVP or closer to product market fit?
So I think towards the MVP, once you're already out there, taking feedback and internalizing that, you will be wrong about things that you're shipping. And that's okay. Like, to make sure that MVP essentially means that you will get some feedback and you will go and improve. Maybe your general theme is right, but the direction that you took it in is not that right. I think internalizing that feedback definitely helps. The other thing, when you're going towards product market fit, and of course, like, now that so many people get funded very easily, maybe we don't think about market fit that much. But if you are at a product where that can soon happen, like say in 6 months of your launching, you have found the market that you can sell for, etc., I think finding a team that can take this forward is very, very important. And knowing what the plan is with this team is also very important, because sometimes that success just hits you really fast and you're not prepared for it. I think you need to have a more broader vision and more inline building to, hey, now I'm going to build this. If this happens, this is what I'm going to do. So more step-by-step approach, maybe in a doc, but also maybe in your head, right? You're able to articulate that well to the team that comes forward. Then I think it really helps, because you have set these boundaries and told people what you want them to broadly achieve, and just watch them achieve that.
And that kind of, you know, links also to the timing when you want to hire a product manager. You know, early stages, the founder himself is the product manager.
Yeah.
When they don't have the liberty to hire. And we'll talk about that much more in detail. But before that, I just want to talk about the role of a product manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the role that they play and what are the functions that they have to coordinate with, you know, within a startup?
So I think at every stage, that answer really differs. And now that I've been consulting for so many companies, I can definitely see that. I think if you are a product person in very early stages, or if you're looking to hire a product person in very early stages, you have to kind of know what problems you want them to come and solve. And sometimes, like you said, if the founder itself is a product person and understands the nuance of product, then the person that you're getting on board is probably just going to execute your vision, right? Like, you know, oh, I want to improve this thing on my app. This is how you do it. Now you go and make it happen. So at that stage, you probably need like an executor PM, and you don't need somebody that's very experienced, right? You just need like somebody who's willing to do the work. But sometimes you have achieved this product market fit, or it's really difficult to achieve. So maybe you're somewhere close to it. Then you need somebody from the field maybe to come and build exactly what you want. So then you're building on themes where you're like, okay, I am a fintech founder and I've understood these things. I want somebody who understands how to do KYC, right? And you want somebody to come and build that flow. Or a more broad thing where you're like, I want somebody who just understands payments. And a lot of things in payments can play, then you want that. But very rarely have I seen, at least in startups, where you want to hire a VP of product, because you don't want somebody to come and run a team, because there is no team yet. There is no KPIs or OKRs. You don't have like a product vision and none of that is set. You want either an executor or you want somebody to come and do a repeatable model where they have figured out all of these things. You want them to come and do it. Or you want a partner where you're like, this is what I'm thinking. If you think I'm right, do it. If you think I'm not right, fight me for it and let's build a good product. So it really depends where, as an early stage founder, do you see yourself in product and what kind of help do you need?
Yeah, got it. So, I mean, there are different product personalities that you have to hire for depending on the stage and life cycle that you are in.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, different startups have different org structures, you know, in terms of having sales, engineering, tech, and somewhere, you know, within that org structure, there'll be a product manager who will have to, you know, sync up with sales, sync up with marketing, and just, you know, play around different functions within the startup to execute the vision of the product. So what's the typical org structure that you see at startups, you know, today?
Yeah.
And is there a preferred structure that you think, you know, works well and can aid and empower product managers to build better products?
So I have seen more than in early stage startups, at least, that every pillar runs by themselves and say a sales, like there'll be head of sales and somebody under him or one more person doing on ground sales, and the same with marketing, etc. Or they are going after a particular problem. So it is around like, oh, everybody now is, these set of people are going to figure out how to acquire users. So there is a marketing person writing amazing copies and blogs to do this. There is a salesperson going and pitching to everybody every day so they can come and be acquired as a user on your platform. And there is a product manager figuring out what are the different funnels that you can do, everything. But all of them together are making sure that we acquire users to do this particular task. So they are built on themes. I think another way, and I think more traditionally how they are built is there are VPs of different lines, like sales has a VP, product has a VP, and marketing, etc. And then everybody reports to the founder. And then it's very top down in the sense that once the VP is there, then people are reporting to the VP. And then it's just a chain of commands that goes. On what do I think works really well is going after a particular thing that you want to achieve together, but also not being very tied to it. So by that, what I mean is, if you know that right now you're all going to concentrate on sales, we make a team that is doing the sales and developers that are going to build for sales only for a short while. And then when we think we have somehow achieved the stability or something, we're able to dismantle this team and then build them up to solve another problem. Now, the main thing that happens is nobody likes reorg, right? Like it's a lot of work and you have to convince people to believe in the submission that your team is going through, etc. And you won't find that every time. So the one thing is getting people to align and change their behavior every like 6 months or 6 weeks or however short or long your goals are is very difficult, but also helps people in understanding all parts of the business, right? They're like, oh, this is how users come in. This is how retention is. This is how people buy our product. This is how people react when our product goes down or is up, etc. Right? So there are many different themes. And I think if you want a more holistic theme to come about, you have to make sure that you don't just say that you hire people with founder mindset,
yeah,
but they're actually doing the work, because the founder is never thinking of one problem, right? He's thinking about sales or she's thinking about marketing. There are so many different personas. And as an early stage team, you want that to happen within your company as well. So tomorrow, like an unknown problem comes, you know, these people can come together and solve that.
Yeah. And that's a very important point, because, you know, there's a lot of emphasis that founders put on passing on their passion and drive for the startup to the earliest team members. And unless they give that responsibility and that experience to them to just, you know, be fluid and take on projects depending on the need, it's really difficult to do that. So I think that's a very important point for, you know, early stage startups and founders to keep in mind. Another very important, you know, topic that we think about when it comes to product managers is allocating time between strategizing versus actually building the product. So, you know, how should a product manager balance that?
That's a very good question, actually. The honest answer is I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows what that kind of time needs to be. Because as a product manager, and obviously the other functions keep, you know, telling you that you don't have a real job, because everybody has an outcome they do and you don't. Like, you don't own the product, you don't own the process. So you're essentially somebody that is there, but not necessarily needed there as well. So a lot of times this hits you. But I think one way to think about it is the product manager should never stop thinking about the problems, even when you're building something else. And when you're building, you know that, hey, I have built these three product lines. And a good strategy would be to think about these various things that I'm seeing other startups do and other startups are excelling at, right? So there is no time where you sit and say, I'm going to strategize for two sprints, which is ideally 2 weeks of time. So you're not strategizing for 1 month. What you're strategizing is every day you're reading some trends or you're going through something and you're like, okay, my product is not here to put this particular thing. But hey, when we're there in about 2-3 months, this is the next thing we should build because it kind of ties into our company strategy, our product strategy, everything. That kind of, it very serendipitously will come together, but it's not actively something that you think about or allocate time to. But it's also important that there is this momentum that keeps going. So I think you need to start training yourself and you need to see the trends around you and see why that particular company built something out at this stage. Why didn't they build it 2 months ago? Or why didn't they build this feature 2 years later? And that is how you will start more strategically thinking versus allocating time to it. So when you're building, you're thinking. When you're not building, you're thinking. So that is the flow you should ideally be thinking about your product and your job in general.
Got it. I think some very good points there. And, you know, there's another debate about the approach in terms of experiment and fail fast versus, you know, being diligent, research-based in terms of launch when you're thinking about the product. So how do you decide whether you should lean on the former or the latter? And how does that differ depending on the startup's business model and the market segment they are in?
I think, honestly, it's not so much about the market. It is as much about your team, right? Like you as a product person or like a founder could say, hey, let's experiment this. But you have to know if you have the bandwidth for it. And if the people that you're working with can handle another problem thrown at them, because like you said, there is also everyday things that they're doing. They're researching, they're understanding, and it's not just product people that do research, right? Every time you go to your eng and say, build this, they are also researching what is the best architecture to follow. Your design's always looking at trends and seeing what is the best way to make it look and feel, etc. So you can't break that momentum. That is one thing that you have to really understand, because most often what happens is you can't agree on a solution. So you're like, let's experiment both. Right. And that is how like A/B testing generally happens, which is so sad because while you are putting no effort because you could not make a decision as a product person or a founder, there are these people who are going to stretch their times and build two solutions for nothing, only because you could not decide. So that is something you have to avoid and know that sometimes it's not experimentation, it's a decision making. And all of this decision is already sort of made because you've done some kind of research and you somewhat understand your competition, right? But that said, when should you experiment is one, obviously when the team can handle it, but also two, when they are minuscule, but will have larger impact. So if you say something like this particular home screen design, I have seen other apps do it. And then if we put this banner in the second line of scroll, I have seen it convert better in all of these apps. And, you know, a lot of more people are clicking it. But on the design and engine, that's just not a lot of development because they have to just move a particular item and they have to design how it will fit with the rest of the design. And obviously, if you have done more like dynamic design or like dynamic home screen, that's not much of a change. And it is something that you will either fail fast or you will experiment and succeed. And it does not cost you more time or effort or any of that. So that's when you should experiment. Because as you get bigger, that experiment, even if it seems very minuscule, affects a lot more systems, right? So you need to be mindful about doing that. And in general, I don't think a lot of people do very hardcore competitor analysis or like go and look for things, right? You probably just look at five or six people who are playing in the same field as you. And there is no like 20 different things that they have done. Because if you open a particular, like if you open the food apps, all of them will eventually look the same. Maybe they've just moved things around or they have a different color scheme, right? But ideally, when you think of like social apps, you kind of already know what it should look like. So there isn't like room for major things that you do as experimentation unless you have a dedicated team to do experimentation. Usually you're just moving things around and hoping more people click or more people convert. And that you should ideally train your team and always be mindful and tell them, hey, down the line, this is what we're going to get at. So please code or please design in a way that we can move things around. And always look at apps that are doing this at scale, right? Like a Facebook or your Instagram always keeps changing things around. It is a big change at their level. But if you think of as an early stage founder, does it cost me a lot to put search up or search down? It probably does not cost you anything because you don't have like billions of people using your app yet. Yeah. And that kind of switch needs to take place within your team as well, so they can keep things ready.
Right. And every stage, you know, you mentioned that point, which is to balance between the effort versus the impact, you know, that experiment will have. So that's something which is very important to decide whether to experiment or not. So Vindhya, we spoke about the role of the product manager and some approaches, you know, that they can take to think about product. I want to now talk about, you know, one of the most common but important question that founders face, which is at what stage should they hire a product manager, especially when the founder himself is a product manager early on, and then he has to decide, you know, what's the right timing.
I actually have a post on this on my blog, which is called vindhyac.com. This is also how I got a job, because I was seeing a lot of early stage founders that were just hiring people because either they raised or they could afford it. But it was like a too fast a hire and it did not make sense. So which is why I put out a statement saying, hey, these are the points I think you should cover when you're hiring or when you're looking to hire. And if you're still hiring, you should talk to me. But essentially what that post sort of tells you is PM is also kind of a role that has been made to seem more sexy than it is, right? And everybody thinks that now when they raise a fund, they should have a design team, they should have a product team, and they should probably have a growth team or something like that to sound important, to sound like, yes, we do serious work here. And a lot of people fall into that trap. But ideally, I think the founder should move on from product when it is no longer him building or her building. It is more them stopping from something being built because everybody is looking at you for answers, but you are at investor meetings or you're pitching to clients or you're probably hacking some other things together as a founder and not doing this particular thing. So now you're slowing down your team. And you're not able to give them the exact direction to go in because you're not able to go through all of the competition out there and actually give them a solution that really will work for your case. So when these things start happening and you can see that overwhelming feeling is probably when you should move on and say, okay, I'm doing too much. I understand the product, but I need somebody that can go and execute and probably stop my bias happening within my company and build the right set of things. So, and it will only be a thought. It's not a metric you hit. It's not like, oh, I have hired design, so I need a product person to write a PRD. No, it's a mindset that you will, like everybody will keep telling you, hey, Vindhya, you're making me slow. And you keep hearing that. And then you're like, okay, now I'm going to hire somebody else to do this. And then you move on.
The other thing I wanted to ask is, you know, early stage startups don't have the liberty to hire, you know, sometimes they, even if they have achieved product market fit, but they haven't raised funding and they're not able to hire the most experienced people, you know, most experienced talent at the startup. So if they were to hire a candidate that lacks that prior product manager experience, what are some signals and traits that they should look for, you know, that could serve as leading indicators of good future product managers?
I was not a product manager when I got hired into my first job. So I think like one of the things that you can definitely do is make sure that person has some understanding of product, right? Has read enough, is able to articulate their thoughts really well, and is able to tell you generally why something should be built at your startup. So what most older companies in the ecosystem would do, like say if you're at an Uber or a Google or something, they won't give you a problem specific to their domain, right? Like Uber won't tell you, hey, tell me how you would build Uber today. They probably are looking for more nuanced approaches. So maybe they'll ask you, oh, how would you build dating? And how would that connect to Uber? Or something more like very broad like that. And a lot of early stage founders will ask the same questions. But the thing is, you are already pressed for time. You don't have money or resources to spend on this. And you are going to gain nothing out of knowing if this person can build a dating app or what their understanding is, right? So make sure that you give them specific problem within your app that you are probably going to face. The other thing that founders will do is they'll tell you exactly what they're facing. So they'll be like, oh, only like 10 people sign up and 2 people use my app every day. How do we solve it? That is not fair to the candidate because you're making them do essentially free work. Well, unless you're going to like pay them for the research and all of that they bring in. So ask them more broad questions and say, okay, if my app needed to be used in Bombay, and right now it's only been used in Bangalore, how do you make that happen? So that's a theme that you will tackle in later stage, and you've given them enough resources, enough understanding of your product to go and solve this. And when they do solve it, they're not probably saying very easy looking things, right? Which anybody could have said. Like they're not probably saying, let's hire influencer marketing, for example, and people will sign up, because that's something everybody would probably say.
Yeah.
So you want it to be a more articulate version. You want it to be more step-by-step process. And you want to tell them who in Bombay would sign up also, right? They're thinking about exactly people, because not everybody wants to be part of your product, right? It's very rare that you will be at that stage where everybody wants to be part of that ecosystem. So you're building in a way that this person understands everything about your product and is able to articulate different stages or what exactly the plan is. Because most often what happens is people think that PMing is just about building a particular thing, and they will just outright tell you, hey, build this thing. But the truth about that is you also know what needs to be built. You just don't know what is the right way to build it. Or to put it simply, all of us have features that we would want. But like you know, you're on Twitter and you're always like, oh, I want an edit button. Why don't you just put an edit button? Edit button is so easy. But it's not easy because there is so much more involved in it. There is a reason they don't have it yet. And even if you wanted to make a case and say, no, Twitter should build this, you have to think a lot more, right? Okay, should it be editable at this particular time? Why should it be 10 seconds? Should it be 5 seconds? What happens when retweet happens? Should I let you delete the old tweet? What happens when you click edit it? How many times can you edit a particular... It's like... When you just say edit button, that is not your product thinking showing up. And a lot of people who want to get into product management start thinking like that. So they are like, oh, okay, I can just build this edit button and I'm done. And that's product. You want to typically avoid that. You want people who will tell you step by step, this is my reasoning. These are the edge cases. This is how much it could probably cost you in the future if you're doing a P&L. This is how many customers you would get if you're a B2B. This is how many people would come into your app if you're a B2C. So you already have these industry themes and you want them to start talking in those themes. And it's not very difficult to pick up, right? Like if they've read probably 10 articles on product building, everything would eventually tell you this. So you just have to see that one, they're able to hustle and learn that by themselves. And two, they're able to show you their thinking, because product, like we said, product is a lot of thinking on the go and keep thinking as you build. So you just have to see if they have that.
Got it. Makes sense. So Vindhya, before we get into the rapid fire, one last thing. So after hiring a product manager, you know, what are the key responsibilities that a founder should, you know, pass on to the product manager? And what are the key responsibilities that, you know, he should continue holding on to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a very, very difficult for founders to understand and be nuanced about it, especially if you're hiring a first product management person as well, which is essentially why I started On That Job also, right? And yeah. For folks that are listening in and don't know what On That Job is, it is a cohort-based class that runs specifically for product managers, for people that are just starting out their product management journey, or are at their first job and don't have mentors, because essentially this is what will happen, that you are a founder and you figured, hey, I can hire somebody for this role, I can afford this person, and then they don't have enough context, you are not happy with what they do, and you have not set them up in a way that they can succeed, and them succeeding is very important to you as well. So I think one, before giving up any responsibilities, you have to tell them what you're expecting out of product management, not them per se. That is probably a conversation you would have if you're trying to promote them or something, but just what do you want your product to achieve,
right?
And then you break that down and say, okay, this is my grand vision, and these are the things we have to do to achieve it. Now, then you tell them, okay, right now I have these two ideas. They're already in flow. So you can go and execute them. First, you build them up and say, okay, let's just get you into the system. So I have everything written down. You just go and execute this. Look at what metrics need to be added. Talk to the people in the team and just make it happen. So now you've given them ownership of execution and they know how to do it. And then the next phase that you will do is, okay, I want you to do this particular thing. I don't know how you'll execute it. Go and execute. So now you're giving them some responsibility of thinking, or in broader terms, some strategic point of view, but not really, because you've already told them, oh, I want the sign up flow to increase, right? But you haven't told them how they can do that. Now it's their responsibility to go and figure out from the data, from the people, from the customers, how they could probably solve that. What I'm trying to get at is, as an early stage founder, this is the first person you're hiring. You can't just say, okay, everybody ask this person all the questions. Everything about product will come from this person, because that person does not know that much. And it's going to take about 90 days or if you're really fast, maybe 30 days of having those back and forth conversations and setting them up. But the ideal, I think what has worked is first give them an assignment that they can do with the team. So the team is comfortable, they are comfortable. Next, give them a one-liner and say, go solve the problem. After that, if they're still doing, give them a theme and say, okay, you're going to do growth. Whatever is needed to do growth, you go do it. And then you set them up. So just break those execution level and responsibilities that they can now do. And then you will broadly understand where they sort of fit in, right? And then you're like, okay, this person can help me here, but I need to hire another person to do this. Or maybe you found the jackpot and this person can do everything in the 8 or 9 hours that they work every day as well. So yeah, that's ideally how you should think about it.
Got it. I think the overarching theme here is having clear communication, setting the right expectations, and being a bit patient just to get them into their role before passing on everything onto them.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So with that, we've reached our final segment of the show, which is the rapid fire. Vindhya, I'll ask some questions and hope to get your honest opinions on the same.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something I'm sure you must be asked a lot about, which is, what are your top resources, blogs, or people to follow to understand all things product? Apart from, of course, Vindhya's Twitter and a blog.
Yes. But no, apart from that, I really enjoy Sachin Rekhi writes really well. He has a resources for product management. John Cutler from Amplitude, which is an analytics tool, has a lot of overarching theme. Shreyas, who is a PM at Stripe, writes really good tweets on Twitter as well. But I think if you are new to everything, don't consume any of this because it's going to be too much for you. I think just go back and read Product Management for Dummies, which is actually a great book, and I've actually read it and nobody says so. But yeah, it's a great book. If you know nothing about the field, start there. If you're an experienced person, I would say go back and read most of these blogs and just read more founders as well. I think the Stripe founders write really well. Hiten Shah writes really well as well. So these are some people to look forward to.
One thing that you'd like to change to improve the state of the startup ecosystem in India?
Oh, so many things, but if I had to pick one, I think there aren't many women in product management or strategic roles. When women do it, it's more project management-y product management. You have the title, but you're not essentially sitting on boards and making more executive or strategic level decisions. So that is something I would really like to change.
Yeah, with you on that. And I'm sure as the ecosystem evolves, we'll see more of that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Next question. If you had to give a TED talk, what topic would you choose and why?
Okay. I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever get to be there, but essentially with all my efforts, what I really want to do is education without schools, ideally, because for product management in particular, because we're on that topic, everybody says you need an MBA. And outside product management also, if you don't have like a lot of degrees, nobody sees much of you. But my efforts with like on that job or just random mentoring that I do is to be able to give you a school, but without having to go to an institution. So something on that lines maybe.
Awesome. Last question. Founders or product managers from the startup ecosystem that you admire and look up to?
Shairi from Shiro's. I think she does a great job in being very open about her process and what she's up to and stuff. I like Sucheta a lot from LBB. I think she's like voice of reason and she stands by a lot of things. I really, really like that. I don't remember her name, but I like the person that's leading Catch Benefits. If you haven't heard of it, it's like benefits for gig workers and it's in the US. Mm-hmm. So I really look up to the things that they are doing as well. In product management, of course, from all the names I said, really look forward to reading more of their work, etc. But other than that, I really like Vikrama, who is at Gojek. Mm-hmm. I think I generally like more product people that have a spine and can talk about issues outside product as well. So I really look up to him. I really like Kunal Shah because I think despite what people say about cred and all of that, he's able to take that ground and just, you know, like be there with it. I think it takes a lot to not get moved by the trolls or like what people are generally, I wouldn't say they're always trolling, but so that's the amount of people I really look up to and learn quite a lot, actually.
Yeah. Awesome. Vindhya, this has been a very insightful discussion and I'm sure it's going to help a lot of early stage founders, people trying to, you know, understand the dynamics between founders and PMs and also those who want to get into product management or startups early on. So thank you so much for, you know, doing this, taking out the time all the way from Germany, different time zones. And I mean, really appreciate you taking out time and being with us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me and great questions. This was really fun. I look forward to seeing what people tell about this episode and I'd love to get some feedback and any things that they want to say to me either on Twitter or my emails like everywhere. So that as well. So I look forward to hearing from more people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the VC Bruno podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let a guest know about it. Share your thoughts on social media. And let them know what were your key takeaways. We would truly appreciate if you could subscribe to our podcast on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a review on Apple iTunes. This will help others discover the podcast. To get insights and to learn more about startups and venture capital, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We will love to hear from you there. You can find all episodes together on our website, thevcpreneur.com. We will be back again next week with another VCpreneur that is making a dent in the venture universe. Until then, take care and keep shining.